So on this very auspicious day, Dipawali, we are blessed to be speaking from the Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam, the king of all scriptures, Grantharaj. Today is Canto 4, Chapter 25, entitled The Characteristics of King Paranjana. I believe it's text 38. Kamnu twad anyam ramaye yarati nam akovidam asampara ya bimukam ashvat asvashtana vidam pashum. Translation: how can I expect to unite with others who are neither conversant about sex nor capable of knowing how to enjoy life while living or after death? Such foolish persons are like animals because they do not know the process of sense enjoyment in this life and after death. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are 8,400,000 species of life, and there are also many different living conditions. In the lower grades of life, in plants and tree life, there is no system for sexual intercourse. In the upper grades, in the life of birds and bees, there is sex, but the insects and animals do not know how to actually enjoy sex life. In the human form of life, however, there is full knowledge of how to enjoy sex. Indeed, there are many so-called philosophers who give directions on how to enjoy sex life. There is even a science called Kama Sutra, which is the science of sex. In human life, there are also such divisions as Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. There is no sex life except in the grihastha or household or ashram. The brahmacharya is not allowed any sex. A vanaprastha voluntarily refrains from sex, and the sannyasi is completely renounced. The karmis do not practice brahmacharya, vanaprastha, or sannyas life, and therefore they are very much interested in the grihastha life. In other words, a human being is very much materially inclined. Indeed, all the living entities are materially inclined. Thus, they prefer grihastha life because there is a concession for sex. The karmis think the other statuses of life are worse than animal life, for animals also have sex, whereas the brahmachari, the vanaprastha, and the sannyasi completely give up sex. The karmis, therefore, abhor these orders of spiritual life. Hare Krishna. Not the verse that everyone would want to speak from. Translation: how can I expect to unite with others who are neither conversant about sex nor capable of knowing how to enjoy life while living or after death? Such foolish persons are like animals because they do not know the process of sense enjoyment in this life and after death. So serious and sober subject matter. In Prabhupada's purport to this verse today, he states that in the material world, all living beings, including human beings, are very much materially inclined. That's a good definition of anyone who lives in this material world, from Brahma down to the Indragopa. That's the business here, to be materially inclined, especially regarding sex life. Prabhupada points out the difference, however, that the sex life of animals in particular, and the sex life of human beings, is different in that for the animal, sex life is more or less just a biological function which preserves the species, so to say. Whereas somehow human beings have evolved sex into a constant meditation, a fascination. For some people, it's just a way of life. Money and sex. This is the purpose. It's their panam gatim. It's their goal of life. Devoid of any transcendental knowledge, they think that this impulse is the goal of life. And that's graphically, very graphically described in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto. Nidraya huyate naktam vya vayena chava vaya diva charte haya rajan kutumbaba vanenava. Those of you who are shloka wallas, this may be in your index cards. The lifetime of such an envious householder is passed at night, either in sleeping or sex indulgence, and in the daytime in making money or for maintaining family members. It is this type of sex life that Prabhupada is condemning in his purport. In fact, if you were listening carefully, you would have heard Prabhupada using very strong language here. He has to, because to become attached to Krishna, which is our goal, we have to become detached from material life. Sense gratification and Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said, they don't mix together very well. So the sadhu means he speaks the truth. He doesn't necessarily care what public opinion will be, what people will think of him or not think of him. He's sadhu. And sadhu means one who cuts. This is one definition of sadhu. We say, sadhu, sadhu. You want to approach the sadhu? You go ahead. Sadhu means one who cuts your attachments by his words. So Prabhupada, in this purport, Prabhupada is speaking strongly. He said in Vedic culture, there are four ashrams, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. But the sex is only allowed in one, in the grihastha ashram. And therefore, because the inclination is so strong in this material world for this one activity, people prefer this ashram to the others. This is strong words. In fact, I was listening to a class recently and Prabhupada spoke even more strongly on this principle. He was speaking on that, the verse from 7th canto, Pum shastriya mituni bhavam tayo mito hridaya granti moho ato rikshata sutapta vitayar janasi mohoyam ahamameti. That the attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together, hridaya grantim, ties together the hearts of the male and the female, one naturally becomes attracted to his body. Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the fairest of them all? You are. Oh, thank you. To the home, to the property, the children, the wealth. Strong verse. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. This is a sannyasi verse. So afterwards, there was questions and answers. So one disciple, they raised their hand and Prabhupada said, yes. And the disciple said, in your class, Prabhupada, you were saying that we should come to the point of having no sex life. But if people didn't have sex, there would be no more human beings. And Prabhupada said, yes, this is the point. Finish up material existence. Back home, back to Godhead. And all the devotees clapped. Of course, by encouraging no sex, I think probably better is to say controlled sex. Vedic scriptures are not trying to impose some like draconian laws to, you know, punish us and you know, make us feel bad and miserable and have no, you know, joy in life. But rather they're trying to help us attain a higher or greater panamgati. Ultimately, sex life is a perversion of our love for Krishna. That's what it is. Love, Prabhupada said, means for Krishna, and lust means for me. So the sect act is something very much for one's own pleasure. And it's actually a perverted reflection of our love for Radha and Krishna. That's how we have to see it. So why shouldn't we try to control it, purify the desire, and attain the higher goal and the higher pleasure of Krishna consciousness? It's not a draconian, says, oh, you stop! Like some Victorian rule, you stop! No, we stop because there's something higher. You can only give up something if you get something higher. So according to Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, there's something much higher than that activity which is also enjoyed by lower species of life. It's something so great, why is it also hankered after by spiders, bugs, cockroaches, snakes, and bears and lions? And we're human beings. We're meant to be Aryans. There's supposed to be something higher to achieve. So understanding, at least intellectually, this principle, we accept controlled sex life for the higher purpose of Krishna consciousness. Raga dvesha vimuktashtu vishayan indriyash charan atma vasyar videyatma prasadam adi gachati. I always like this verse. A person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through the regulative principles of freedom. Regulative principles, but the regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. Yes, they're regulative principles, but Prabhupada very poetically describes them. It's his translation of that verse. Regulative principles of freedom. We break the chains of material desire, which bind us to what? This world of birth and death. Just burst them asunder, and you ascend to the transcendental realm. By practicing regulative principles of freedom, we attain the higher goal. So, we're not fascinated by this sex desire. We're not enamored by it. We see the end result. Phalina parichate. In Sanskrit, we say if you're looking at something, if something's proposed to you, if there's an idea, then phalina parichate. Don't just judge it by the immediate, what you see or halfway. Phalina, judge something by the result. What is the end result? Freedom or entanglement? One time, Prabhupada became very heavy. He said, this sex desire. He said, sex, illicit or licit? He said, it's all illicit. He had different moods. Because we become entangled. Of course, in the Grihastha order, it's the burden of love. It's a responsibility, it's a burden, it's entangling. But ultimately, it's seva to the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, but the gross sexual urge, we have to see it for what it is. It's not our friend. It's our enemy. Prabhupada said one time, this sex desire, he said, he laughed, it is public enemy number one. Like in America, we have, you know, the FBI has a list of you know, criminals. So if you're number one on the top, you're like, I think some years, for many years, Osama bin Laden was public enemy number one until President Obama wiped him out and got reelected. So public enemy number one, probably this sex desire, and that's a paraphrasing Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, our worshipable Lord. That's his words in Gita. Ama esha kora esha rajoguna samud bhava maha sano maha papma vidyenam iha varinam. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of the contact with the modes of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring sinful enemy in this world. You have to know your enemy. They have a saying, keep your enemies closer than your friends, closer by you. You have to know your enemy. If you have any enemies, you'll know what it's like. You have to know what they're doing. So this lust, it's not our friend. He's our enemy. And we have to conquer him. Cupidon, we say in Francais. Ça c'est le Cupidon. Le Cupidon. It sounds more like Cupid. Cupidon. He's taking his arrows and no one is freed from this in the material world, from Brahma down to the insignificant ant. We even hear how Brahma once chased after his daughter and with lusty desires. To speak of us puny little earthlings, something you struggle with. But we have to conquer it. We have to be like Bivamangal Thakur, whose Samadhi Mandir is there on the way to Gopeshwara Mahadev. Whenever I go to Gopeshwara Mahadev to ask permission to enter the Dham, I first stop at Bivamangal Thakur, who lived here 800 years, who used to visit the prostitute, Chintamani, but heard from her words of wisdom and came here and renounced and became a great devotee. He said, now that I'm tasting this ever-fresh, nectarian, beautiful rasa of love with Krishna, whenever I think how I used to enjoy sex life, and he did, Chintamani was a very famous prostitute. He said, whenever I think how I used to enjoy sex life, now that I'm experiencing this pleasure of Krishna consciousness, when I think of the sex life before, Prabhupada said, he quoted, I spite at the thought. Prabhupada said, instead of spit, he said spite. It's Prabhupada's English. It was so touching the heart sometimes. I spite at the thought. In Geneva one time, I heard Prabhupada quote that. I spite the thought. This is the stage we have to come to. We think, yes, I am advanced devotee. I've been around 30 or 40 years now. Maybe close to Raghunuga. Just by time. And my kirtan, my classes, my persona. But if just one material desire comes from the silt at the bottom of the lake of your heart, just bubbles up like bubbles sometimes come up in a lake, when the silt is moved. If just one material desire comes to your mind and you entertain it for even a split second, it means you're not free from the bodily concept of life yet. That's only the beginning. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. ABCs are I'm not the body. But if you think for a moment, if you look twice as he walks by or she walks by, like Bob Dylan said, what did he say? Don't look twice. If you want someone, but twice means that there's still some contamination in the heart. So we have to be humble, realize where we're at in Krishna consciousness. Be honest. We have a powerful enemy. Oh, he said, don't think twice. Don't think twice, it's all right. So if you look twice, this means something's there, so we had to be honest where we're at, and from that point, make gradual advancement in Krishna consciousness. It's okay to be a beginner. It's okay to be born as a baby. Nobody expects you to be born as an adult. You're born as a baby, and babies have their faults. But the parents understand and they gradually elevate. So the guru accepts disciples and they have their faults, but in due course of time you're supposed to mature. And what is our maturing? Part of the maturing process is to conquer material desire. Two things we have in mind. Conquer material desire and awaken our spiritual desire for Krishna. This is the process simplified. So this is our enemy. Krishna said, lust only, which is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of the world. So you stand before lust and you want to fight? In Sun Tzu's Art of War, it's a small booklet which was printed in China many centuries ago, but even today, military commanders, even at West Point, they still refer to this book. It's like a standard. Sun Tzu's Art of War. It says, if your enemy is more powerful than you, don't even consider attacking. And if necessary, run away to fight again another day. If your enemy is equal to you in strength, in numbers, in military hardware, in strategy, in previous victories, think 1,000 times before attacking. If your enemy is inferior to you in all ways, attack immediately. So is this Maya, this sex desire, is it inferior to us or no? Is it equal? No. More powerful. Even demigods are bewildered by lusty desires. What hope do we have? But Sun Tzu gives very nice, because there's always an answer to every problem. Even materially, you look for it long enough. What to speak in spiritual life? There's an answer to all problems. You just go back to Godhead. Punarjanma nivijate, you never take birth again. All problems solved. But Sun Tzu gives a very intelligent way to conquer a more formidable soul, attrition. Attrition. Attrition means that it's like the definite in a thesaurus, it'll probably say something like, you know, you gradually erode the enemy, you wear them down, you weaken them gradually till they come to the point where they're no more a formidable enemy. Like he gives the example that you, in the dead of night, you come to where your superior enemy is and you surround his fort in such a way that no supplies can come in and no supplies can come out. So after a while, they don't have anything to eat, they don't have anything to drink, there's no munitions coming in, they become weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. Then attack! If your enemy is weaker, he says, attack immediately! So through attrition, you can wear down a formidable enemy. So we can deal with lust in this way, not immediately try to renounce. That's why sannyasa is forbidden in this age, in general. There's four or five things that are forbidden in this age. Sacrifice of the animals, and begetting a child and your brother's wife, and sannyasa, and some other things like this. It's forbidden because for the general population it's not possible. We can't renounce immediately, so what does attrition mean? We deal with sex desire by learning to control our senses and gradually conquering. Controlling that desire. Instead of uncontrolled, unregulated, illicit sex, controlled sex. Prabhupada's definition of that is for conceiving children, raising children. Vachavegam, manasagrodavegam, jivavegam, upashtavegam. This is how we attack, how we erode our material desires. We just use them in a religious way from time to time, and gradually, as we're advancing in Krishna consciousness, the superior taste of Krishna consciousness, Padam Drishti Nivartante, captures the heart. Because the sex is a few moments, a few minutes here and there, but what are we doing constantly? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Nama, Hare. Rupa Goswami says, I do not know how much nectar these two syllables Krishna contain. When I chant them, they enter into my heart, in that ear, and go into my heart and create a jubilant festival of the holy names. What compares to that? And it's constant, it's continual, it's Ananda Buddhi Bhardhanam. So Kirtani Yad Sadahari, if you're chanting the holy name, or you're serving the holy name by distributing the holy name in so many varieties of ways, you get the idea, you get the point after a while. Nothing compares to this. So sex is allowed in the Grihastha ashram, but the Grihastha, the Brahmachari, the Vanaprastha, the Sannyasi, they get, by engaging in devotional service, they realize the superiority of one thing over another. That's basically what it is. Like you take two mangoes in the market, one's kind of green and hard, one's yellow and has a spot, it's ripe. You smell it. This is superior by comparing. So by comparing the activities of devotional service to the material desires that we have to satisfy to some degree because we're in material bodies, you realize, I want a citadeya. I want a spiritual body. I don't want a material body. And gradually you give up. So that experience is gained particularly in the Grihastha ashram, where sex is allowed. And by sex, we don't just mean the sex act. Sex also means looking, touching, seeing, talking, planning. So in this world, Prabhupada said, a boy wants a girl and a girl wants a boy. All right. But come together religiously. Fulfill the material desires, the needs for association with the opposite sex, but make the focal point of the relationship serving Guru and Gauranga. You can't artificially renounce. You don't want to be uncontrolled. So controlled association, sweet words, comfort, loving exchanges. You know, I don't go into detail household life. It's just, in the home, these are things, it's natural. But instead of making the television the altar, you install the deity of the Lord. And then your house becomes like Vaikuntha. One time Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, one morning I woke up and I saw that my house had been transformed into Vaikuntha. This is Grihastha life. Husband and wife come together for the higher purpose of serving Krishna. So they throw out the television. That's the first thing you do on the day of the marriage. The girl comes home to the home of her in-laws, her husband's family, and because she's in control of the griha, that's her abode. Husband, his controlling area is his workspace, his office. Wife gets the house, half and half, 50-50. And she works there. So first thing she does when she walks into the home of her husband, she takes the television and she walks to the apartment. She's on the fifth floor and she drops it out the window. Boom! Big crash and Hribo! The one-eyed guru of Kali Yuga. That's because what is on the TV? That is the revelations of the heart of a materialist. Of course, it's presented in a very beautiful, attractive, fascinating way. But where are all the stories, the plots, the intrigue, the news? Where's it all coming? From the heart. This is what they like. They think they like these things. And they're, with science and technology, they're making it quite fascinating. But really, it's the heart. We want to look into the heart of a devotee. We want to look into Hanuman's heart. Boom! Hanuman bursts open his heart. What do you see? Sitaram. Jesus Christ opens his heart. You see a bleeding heart. Compassion for all living entities. Purified. Cheto, darpana, marta, heart which has become purified. of all the nasty things. Of course, we take them as nice things, but we accept the superior intelligence of our spiritual master who informs us, no, you're thinking like that, but you're in disease condition. You're thinking like that, but this is the disease condition. So when you get healthy, you'll like more to have RT than turn on the soap opera. So for most people, 95, 96, 97, 98, this is the natural, authorized, gradual process of purification. Purification, quite frankly, means sex desire. Prabhupada said, love of God begins when sex desire is destroyed. That's when prema or bhav begins to awake. Ado shuddha tata sadhu sangha ta bhajana kriya anartha nivriti siyat. Nartha means what is wanted in the heart. There's lots of things we want in the heart. There's natural desires to serve Krishna eternally. We want those. But it got mixed up. Some sand went in the sweet rice. And it got mixed up. So the anarthas, we want to kick them out. So ado shuddha tata sadhu sangha ta bhajana kriya anartha nivriti siyat. This is the gradual process. Your desire to begin this practice comes when you associate with devotees. You see them on Harinam. You buy a book. You go to a festival. A change of heart. And by associating with them, you want to be like them. When I first met the devotees, I told Vishnujan Maharaj, I want to be just like you. He said, then come with me. I was a householder. I couldn't go. And I said, you come with me. Come to our house for 3 days. So he stayed at our house for 3 days. And by that association, a strong desire to take up something that I would have never dreamed of in a million years came about. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Krishna consciousness is something you imbibe from another devotee. Then you take up the principles, the purification comes, purified, and then anartha nivriti, you're halfway there. The desires go away, and then in that clean, fertile ground of Krishna consciousness, that golden seed of devotional service, it can sprout very healthy, blossom, but produce the fruits and flowers of love of God. So we hanker for this. So it's very important that our grihastras set the good example for the world. Because right now, what they know as grihastha life is a shambles in this world. 3 out of 4 marriages end in divorce, at least in my country. I think in France it's 4.8. No. It's natural that a man and a woman come together in this world, but it should be done in a spiritual way so they can meet their needs and their most important needs, spiritual life. So, therefore, Prabhupada said, my Guru Maharaj created an army of sannyasis. That was time, place, and circumstance. Prabhupada said, I am creating an army of grihastras. And you see that in the beginning of this movement, it was mainly the grihastras who were going to London and going around America and going overseas. And Prabhupada was so proud of his grihastras. Although he lambasts the grihastha ashram in this purport, it's a general term he's using for householder life, but this does not mean his disciples or the followers of true Varnashram Dharma. So this art of attrition, this slowly working down the material desires, this is the grihastha ashram. And it's an ashram. When you think of ashram, what are you thinking? It's a place of the spiritual master. Ashram means a place of the spiritual master. So the home becomes really a place of the spiritual master. Manasa deha gaya yokichumor. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this is my house, but I don't own anything here. Lord, you created everything. You're maintaining everything. And you're destroying everything. And I'm thinking this is mine? I didn't create it. I can barely maintain it, especially during the recession. And it's going to be destroyed. I can't claim. This is all your property. This is how the grihastha is thinking. This is I. Lord, he's got Thakurji on the altar, and the whole house is his, and we're just using it in his service, like this. So it's an ashram. It's a sacred ashram, where the husband and wife and everybody serves Krishna together. And it's sacred because it begins from a sacred principle, Vivaha Yajna. Vivaha Yajna is one of the samskaras, which are absolutely required in civilized human life. A samskara is performed at an important junction in everyone's life, like bamboo. Bamboo has different, if you look at a bamboo stick, it has, you know, a knot here, then a knot there, and a knot there. And that keeps the bamboo stick together, because bamboo is kind of weak by nature. But those knots, they're very hard. You can't break them. So in important junctures in our life, there's a Vedic sacrifice that's performed to give you a deep spiritual impression, to keep you strong and moving forward. Movement, moving forward in spiritual life. Like even before you're born, there's a samskara. Garbhodana samskara. Garbhat means the womb. So before conceiving, the husband and wife, they perform a particular ceremony, which Prabhupada just had the householders chant extra rounds in this movement. But when the child came into that environment, it was auspicious. Then there's a samskara when you're born. There's a samskara when you get your name. There's a samskara performed when they cut your hair. There's a samskara when you start school. These are important, vital moments in your evolution, in your growth. And when you get married, there's a samskara, Vivaha Yajna. It's a reminder, keep it pure. Keep the goal in mind. Don't get distracted. Don't fall into sense gratification. Work together. Many hands make small work. Ultimately, work together that you can all become liberated, like this. So samskara. Actually, samskara means impression. So there's many such guidelines for householders in Vedic culture. There's different instructions for the wife and different instructions for the man, because they're different. They're very much different. A man and a woman, it's the human species, but they're very much different. So there's different duties. They're working as one body, we say like that. The husband and wife are one body. And I've heard it said that the woman is the better half. Because man is out working all day and in the passion and associating with the this and that. But in typical Vedic culture, lady's home, the deity's there, and she's cooking pure prasad, and there's a photo pictures. And so her environment is more controlled like this, though. Like that. But the man's first duty in the Grihastha ashram is what? Money? No. That's just like something you better come up with. And if any brahmachari is thinking of getting married, he should remember that it's a very costly affair to properly maintain a household, to maintain children. Each child costs something like $800,000 by the time they finish college. You shouldn't just think, oh, she's going to iron my dhoti and cook for me. And you won't even see it. You'll be at the factory working. And rightfully so, because you have to bring, you're the breadwinner. But that's there. The most important duty of the householder, because we're talking about sex here, so what does it mean to take care of a family? It means you have to protect your wife. In Vedic culture, women are always protected so they can peacefully attain the higher goal of Krishna consciousness. So in youth, a girl is protected by her father. Later, when she reaches maturity, she's protected by her husband. And in older years, in the event that her husband passes away, she's protected by an older son. So in the Grihastha ashram, the husband has to protect. But how he can protect? Bhagavatam says that a family member is a fallible soldier. He can't protect you from birth, from disease, old age, and death. So what does it really mean, protection? What type of protection are we talking about, that the father protects the girl, the husband protects his wife, or the son? It really means the husband protects the wife from illusion. Because there's no greater foe in this world than illusion, which means to forget Krishna. If you forget Krishna, then you get tossed, you know, just toss it somewhere. You get tossed back into the ocean of material existence. And you go bloop. That's how Prabhupada in the 1966 lecture, that's where the word bloop came from. He was referring to some of his disciples who were unfortunately leaving, and he said, they're blooping. Somebody kind of scratched their head. They're blooping, Prabhupada? Yeah, bloop. The sound of a rock when you throw it in the ocean. Bloop. So when a disciple leaves and goes back in the ocean of material existence, I say bloop. That's the greatest calamity. To forget the lotus feet of Krishna is a source of all our misery. And to remember the lotus feet and serve the lotus feet of Krishna is a source of all our good fortune. So the husband has to protect the wife from illusion. And how does he do that? By being a good devotee. Examples higher than precept. He should be stalwart. Up early in the morning, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram, Boo, Mangalarti, Tulsi Puja, Bhagavatam. He has to be preacher. Can't get the Brahmin thread and just say, I'm Brahmana. Brahmin means you have to preach. You want to preach. You like to preach. It's the heartbeat of a Brahmana. Sudras, they like to serve by using their hands, getting calluses on their hand, building the beautiful temple for Radha and Krishna. The Vaishyas, they like to milk the cow to get that liquid religiosity. By drinking, you get the brain for understanding philosophy. Kshatriyas, they like to fight to uphold Dharma. They like to go out there and their ornaments, their jewels, are the scars on their bodies. Right? I have scars. You don't just get a scar. You got to go out and fight to get a scar. Not like getting a tattoo. Look how beautiful I am. My tattoo. Not as easy as paying $100. You got to go out and fight. Maybe you'll die. Kshatriya, they are proud. They put salt on their wounds. See? Fighter! For Krishna! Hey, Govindaji! Cut off the heads. But Brahmanas, what is their... They like to fight illusion, Maya. How do they do it? They sit in one place with their Ganesh belly and they preach all day the absolute truth. And the reward is they get the sweets. So they're proud of their big belly, not like in modern society, you try to hide the belly. Right? They, hop. Because they're sitting all day, they're not exercising much, and they're getting that in their preach. They like to fight illusion by their preach. So someone, one who has a sacred thread, he looks for every opportunity to preach. And the husband, there's the Bhagavatam, and there's the instructions, and the discussion with the family member. It's not like he's preaching down, but they enjoy coming together as a family and reading the books and discussing and going to holy places together. The husband and wife, they make Krishna consciousness fun for the children. And it is fun. What better source of happiness can one have than Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Shmaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandham, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani, Vedanam, in the wonderful movement that Srila Prabhupada, the greater family of devotees that Prabhupada created. Unless we have that higher taste, we'll go for someplace else. So the leaders in Krishna consciousness, they have to organize festivals, parikramas, kirtans, classes, and delicious feasts. It's okay once a week. Something really delicious. Gulab jamuns, laglus, ladus. I remember when I first joined, Narottamananda was the cook in the Detroit temple. I can still remember every single Sunday feast over a period of 12 months. That's a lot of Sunday feasts. Especially these cookies they made, almond cookies or sweets or something. Yes, we have to introduce the superiority of the spiritual world over the material world in order to keep that taste, to keep that impetus, to achieve that higher goal. So this is a husband's duty. And he has to make money because yajnas are required and because he has to give dan, charity. The brahmacharis aren't working. The vanaprasas aren't working. Sannyasis aren't working. They're just Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. They're spreading the movement, but where will the money come? So the grihasthas remain detached by giving that blood, that hard-earned money, for the maintenance of the other ashrams and the propagation of Krishna consciousness. Of course, because there's wife and family, facilities are needed. Lots of facilities are needed to keep everything in order, to keep everyone happy like that. But something must go. Bhaktisarana Saraswati, he was very strict. His grihasthas, they had to come at the end of every month and put all their earnings on the table. He would take what he needed, and whatever was left on the table, that was their maintenance for the month. They had so much shraddha, so much faith in Guru Maharaj. They were happy to make this. Some of them lived such simple lives. They lived almost like brahmachari grihasthas. But they were happy because they saw, and he had many plans for spreading Krishna consciousness. He'd build a temple and everyone would be exhausted, and the next day he'd say, I want to build another temple. I want to print more books. I want more of this and that. So that's pretty surrendered. You put everything on, and then you say, Guru Maharaj, you take what you want. When I first joined, I had $2,000. That was a lot for a kid. And the temple president said, give it all. I got $10 back. Kept the $10 for 11 months, and Prabhupada came to visit the temple. And he was saying, you have to give everything to Krishna. So I thought, my everything is $10. So I went upstairs as Prabhupada was leaving, and I wrote a note. Dear Srila Prabhupada, thank you so much for coming. We're going to miss you. I didn't get initiated. I was 2 days away from the, you know, a lot of time to get initiated. But anyway, I wanted to give you this $10 for your newly created book fund. I put in an envelope. That's all I had. But by giving all I had, Prabhupada, he reciprocated so nicely. He encouraged the principle that if we give everything, we get everything back. Whatever it is, whatever your everything is. And a couple of weeks, a letter came in the mail for me and my dear Bhakta Brian. I beg to thank you for your letter of such and such a day, and I especially want to thank you for your donation of $10 for my newly created book fund. I have information from the temple authorities that you're doing nicely, so my advice to you is follow these regulative principles, chant your 16 rounds, and always follow in the footsteps of advanced devotees. And in due course of time, I will accept you as my duly initiated disciple. I also appreciate your feelings of separation from me. He said, I am always in a mood of separation from my Guru Maharaj, but I always feel that he's watching over and protecting me. That letter meant so much to me at that particular moment, because Prabhupada promised he would initiate me. And it meant so much to me after Prabhupada's departure, because I would read it over and over and over and over, that although his Guru Maharaj was gone, he always felt that his Guru Maharaj was watching over and protecting. So for giving everything I had, which wasn't much, but it's what I had, so much reciprocation was there. So grihasthas, they learn this art. By giving tens of thousands, they get tens of millions. It's a formula that just doesn't make, it's not logical. But Krishna consciousness is not logical. Krishna consciousness is completely transcendental and under the control of Krishna. And by sacrificing our various ways according to our ashrams, we experience this. And this type of grihastha, who, like Narottam Das Thakur, he said, grihe thako bhani thako. He said, whether one is a householder maintaining home and family and all the paraphernalia and the interests and his dues to society, whether one's a grihastha or he's a tyagi living in the forest, if that person has as his ultimate interest, the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Whether he's a householder or a sannyasi, Narottam says, I take the feet of that devotee and put them on my head. So therefore, ultimately, we're not, you know, brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, sannyasis. We're not, you know, we're not vaishyas. Ultimately, we're just eternal servants of Krishna, serving the Lord according to our destiny. And the main thing is that we just do the best we can to serve our previous acharyas in spreading the Sankirtan movement. So, dan has to come, charity has to come from the man. The lady's duty is to keep everything nice and clean, a nice spiritual atmosphere in the home. The husband comes home, it's like Vaikuntha, because you know what it's like out there in the world today. He comes home, there's incense burning, the deities look beautiful. The wife has only sweet words. I'm speaking about an idyllic situation, but that's how we speak from this platform of Vyasasan. There may be different permeations and combinations and so forth and so on, but we always aspire for perfection. We know what is the higher goal, and we try to achieve it gradually, like that. So, nice cook. Wife knows how to cook nicely like this, and sweet words and encouraging, and like this, work as a team. And like that, household life is like seventh heaven. Well, not really. I was married 11 years before I became a devotee, so let's talk about the real thing, Swami. Sometimes there's disagreements. Sometimes there's shouting. Sometimes there's threats. Yes, because until we're perfect, there's going to be friction. In family life, between temples and the GBC platform, it's not surprising because we still have material desires. So there's going to be conflict. But the fighting between husband and wife who are Krishna conscious, Chanaka Pandit says, don't take it so seriously. If you see it, don't worry. They'll be okay. Rishe Shradhe Aja Yudhe Prabhate Mega Garjane Dampatya Kalaye Chaiva Bhavambre Lagu Kriya in Niti Shastra. The funeral ceremony of a sage who died in the forest, a fight between two goats, a clap of thunder in the morning, and a quarrel between husband and wife, all that begins in grand style, but the outcome is insignificant. Well, sometimes there's some disturbances, but because they're working together for the higher goal, it's not so. It's like many rivers are flowing into the ocean, but the ocean remains equipoised. So devotee's life, although disturbances may come, because his heart is large and a desire to serve Krishna, disturbances don't disturb so much. The main thing, again, is Krishna consciousness. And last but not least, because I've gone over time, is that the husband and wife, in their conquest of the senses, to come to the higher platform of purifying the senses and fully surrendering to Krishna by conquering material desires, they have to, their another offering to society is children. Children. At the present moment, this world is overburdened by Varna Sangara. Even the word makes you tremble. Varna Sangara. Unwanted children conceived from lust. Juvenile delinquents. Who are not really an asset to society. So our prestigious grihastha community, they must have sex. Krishna said, I am sex which is not contrary to religious principles. That I am. Although Prabhupada's saying, throw it out! No sex! No more human society! That's one lecture. But Prabhupada would balance it by other lectures so all of us could fit in, the International Society for Krishna. We could all find a place and gradually purify ourselves from where we are in Krishna consciousness. Buddha said, the middle way. So, sex is there. You must have sex. And that sex is glorious. Krishna says, kamosmi, I am that sex. Where what comes forth from that act is a beautiful Vaishnava or Vaishnavi who grows up and becomes a real asset to to society. People abuse the principle of sex, but if it's used properly, it's something glorious. Even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, and it should not be taken out of context, he was just speaking about the principle of conceiving children in the grihastha. He said, I would have sex 10,000 times. It was guaranteed that every child would be Krishna conscious. He's a sannyasi, but he's just speaking of the principle. So this, and there's nothing more satisfying than that. There is some pleasure in the sex act, but it's here today and gone in a moment. What is the real pleasure? When your children get initiated. I've seen. You know, they struggle a little bit when they're 13, 14, 15, something like that, but then on their own, the determination, you know, it's like they're born into the movement, but that day they join the movement by telling mother or father or the spiritual master, I want to get initiated. I'm going to start chanting 16 rounds. And they start chanting, or 12, 11, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And they keep going. Even their friends at school make fun of them, make fun of their lunch bag. You don't eat meat, you're a sissy. Hare Krishna. You know, at that age, to be tested, that's the real test. You know, at home it's easy, but when you go with your friends, the peer pressure at school like that, and of their own accord, they come forward and they want to be Krishna. I think nothing pleases the husband and wife more than that. It's a long-term investment, but it pays off. And that's the real asset of our society. That's the real asset. Just like you hear in Vrindavan. You come here in the evening, Gopal, Vrindavan Das, Govardhan Dari, Keshava, Mukunda, Radha Krishna Das, Katyayani, Mataji, Rasarani, Kishori Radhe, Parvati. You see these kids, they have a taste for chanting Hare Krishna. Oh, they're just kids. Where did you get your taste? And you know, you're 30 or 40 or 60 now. But at some point, that initial taste came from the kirtan, on the streets, whatever. That's why you are where you are now. So thank God the children have this desire for 24-hour kirtan. And they're arranging kirtan melas. I got an invitation to come to the kirtan mela in Johannesburg in December. This is my break time. This is the only time in December I have for doing my bhajan, Hare Krishna, and my, you know, just reading and chanting. But immediately, when the kids, you know, they're 15, 16, saying, Maharaj, could you come to the kirtan mela? I immediately wrote back, yes. To encourage the youth, because the future of any society is in their youth. So yes, maybe they have their struggles, maybe they have their temptations, they have their way they do their hair and their tattoos, and they have this and they have and that, and you know, we don't agree with all that. But they have the most important thing. They like to chant, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare. And we should fan that spark, encourage them, arrange everything. Because in a few years, we're going to be out of here. And the movement's going to be in their hands. So we should give these children everything we have, all encouragement, all facilities, Lakshmi, whatever they need to fan that fire. Because we brought them into this world, and we better make sure that when they die, they leave this world. That's the success of grihastha life. You may not be around to see it. You may be here or there, but if your child goes back home, back to Godhead, wherever you are, you just disappear and you find yourself in some kunja in Goloka Vrindavan. Because you've done that service. It's such an important service. It's difficult. It's hard. You get gray hair before you're 30. And you're stressed out and this and that. But the children, they couldn't have taken birth in this movement unless there's something special. And even if they came when later stage, when they're 8, 9, 10, if they're here and they're showing even a little interest, we have to fan that. And we have to bring them to the point of initiation. The other day I initiated a 14-year-old girl. Prema Mandali, I gave her the name, Dasi. Are you here, Prema? Mandali? So, is she here? So, Someone said, Mara, she's only 14. I said, yeah, she's been a devotee for 14 years. How long have you? I've been a devotee 5 years. She's 14. She was brought. I said, she's steady, she's fixed, she's shy, she's chaste. Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavatam that all children should be initiated by the time they're 12 years old. So if we see that steady, of course it's always a gamble, but it's just as much a gamble to initiate someone who's been in, you know, uncontrolled sense gratification for 40 years and is recommended for initiation after 2 years. The guru has to take that risk, but it's a calculated risk. It's not done just whimsically. But like, nothing's more satisfying than initiating the youth. And we offer our prostrated obeisances in the dust of the feet of all our God brothers, God sisters, and our own disciples, and all the grihasas of the movement who are taking this service very responsibly and raising these children, because, as we said, they will be the future, and they will push on the Sankirtan movement as we are trying in our humble ways. Hare Krishna. Shrila Prabhupada ki. Gaurav Prem Dan Harinam Sankirtan ki. Hare Krishna.